are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I wouldn't exactly call us pals. More like internet acquaintances that occasionally have to talk to each other. We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, I mean, if we're being completely candid, I am pretty good at video games. And that goes to you listeners as well. If you, like, check me out on PS4, if you ever want to get at me, I will definitely mash you in whatever.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Now that we're on the record, can you just admit to me in public here that you were hustling me? I hate unrealistic sports games, so
really?
I'm sorry. Hate me all you want, but those games are fucking stupid.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 84 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits football podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. And with me is my old pal, Eli Rosenzweig. What's up, dude?
I wouldn't exactly call us pals. More like, internet acquaintances that occasionally have to talk to each other.
I think you're low playing it a bit. So that's
yeah, I can't wait to bro down after this podcast and play you in video games for a couple hours. Although I'm going to get slaughtered in every single game we play, so that's always fun.
Yeah, I mean, if we're being completely candid, I am pretty good at video games. And that goes to you listeners as well. If you, like, check me out on PS4, if you ever want to get at me, I will definitely mash you in whatever, you know, game, that, whatever sports game that you play. I don't dive into anything other than sports games. Usually, you know, NBA 2K, MLB The Show, Madden, I'll go into NHL as well. But after that, it's kind of like, I'm not really into it.
Now that we're on the record, can you just admit to me in public here that you were hustling me? Because when we first started playing the show in NBA 2K, I pretty much dominated the first like five games or so in each sport. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, I can't beat you in any of these games ever. So I think you were hustling.
No, I will say I've always been an NBA Live fan. So that's the kind of the buttons that I got used to. So when you and I started playing NBA 2K, it was me getting used to that, you know, style and, you know, just the whole game in itself. So you definitely beat me legit there. As far as the show, I mean, I just didn't get used to the way you pitched. Because, I mean, you are the type of guy that will throw curveballs like way up in the zone. And when you play guest pitch, and, you know, I assume that any breaking stuff would be down in the zone. It's kind of hard, you know, when that kind of comes through that way. So that was legit as well. So, you beat me fair and square, you know, at the beginning. And then once I get to know you a bit, it's all downhill. But
NBA Live, Mike, I couldn't have lost any more respect for you right there.
Well, I haven't played NBA Live since I've touched
NBA 2K. I'm surprised you don't play NFL Game Day on the PS1 right now.
You know what old game I do miss, though, is NFL Blitz.
I knew you were going to say that. I hate unrealistic sports games, so
really?
I'm sorry. Hate me all you want, but those games are fucking stupid.
Dude, I loved it. They had a baseball version as well, right? I can't remember the name.
Yeah, I don't remember the name either. There's only one real unrealistic sports game that's good.
What's that?
NBA Jam.
Oh, Jams is great, too. Oh, my God.
It was amazing.
Those need to make a comeback. I'm sure they have made a comeback in some way.
They do have NBA. I know a couple years ago they came out with an NBA Jam on like the Nintendo Wii or something.
See, I'm in for that. Like, I mean, I wouldn't play it on the Wii because I don't mind the Wii. I understand what it, you know, what it's trying to do and have you be active and all that stuff. But I mean, let's be real. Anybody that's playing a video game isn't trying to get up and, you know, run around the house. But
tell that to all those Pokemon people.
Yeah, I would, but I'm not. I'm not at all.
Sure, you're not. We should probably get into week two, considering there's like, what, 14 games to preview, and we got to keep this podcast under like 5 hours.
Yeah, there is a ton to go through. But I will say, you know, we haven't really talked to you a lot, lately, Eli. So first off, you know, are you in a ton of leagues this year, A? And B, you know, how was your week one? You know, how did you feel about week one as a whole? Were you kind of excited about Dak Prescott? Did you like the way that game kind of played out? Do you like the way Ezekiel Elliott looked?
I got to be honest. I dozed off in the second half. I worked Saturday night into Sunday morning, slept for 3 hours, woke up, watched football, and then I had to work again that night. So, yeah, I kind of dozed off at halftime at 4 o'clock games. I'm not proud of it, but, you know, got to get at least a couple hours before work. I don't know. Like, I'm excited as a Cowboy fan in terms of Prescott could be a good quarterback in the future potentially. But, I mean, it's going to be another lost season for Dallas. Obviously, Elliott didn't look great. But when you got a guy like Prescott being the quarterback, they're going to stack the box. So, you know, it's going to be tough for Elliott to to be going off consistently. So, you know, whatever. Things will get better in Dallas. Just, you know, probably not going to be this year.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I'm a little bit more positive on the Dallas situation. I like their defense, too. I felt like their defense,
their defense
played
is
pretty
adequate.
Well.
It's not they get no pressure on opposing quarterbacks. Their DBs are fine, but not good enough to make up for the fact that they get no pressure. So they're fine. And, you know, when Sean Lee gets hurt, you know, within the next 35 minutes.
Yeah, he's hurt right now, actually. No, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I'm sure he is in some capacity.
How many leagues are you in? I'm only in two.
I honestly dropped a ton of leagues this year. So I am now in, I believe, let me count 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm in 6 leagues this year, which is a massive, I know that sounds like a lot, but it's a massive step down. I actually am proud of myself for saying no to a ton of leagues this year, because it got to be too much last season. I ended up, you know, pretty much saying yes to whoever, you know, any listener league or just anything that came up, I always said yes to, and it really bit me in the ass in the end, because I couldn't keep up with all of it. And at the end of the day, like, not only do you want to have fun as a fantasy player, but you also have to be fair to the league that you're joining itself. Like, they need a manager or a owner in there that's going to be able to participate at, you know, its full capacity, be able to make trades, you know, waiver wire moves, all that type of stuff. So it wasn't fair to me or the league to take on that much of a workload in fantasy at all.
Yeah, that's why I quit a bunch of leagues in all three sports. So.
Yeah, and that goes, you know, for some advice for the listeners as well. I mean, if you guys are in, you know, 20-something leagues or something like that, then, you know, if you can participate in that many and you know, do as well as you possibly can in all of them and, you know, and do well, I don't mind it at all. But at the end of the day, I don't think but maybe 5% of the population can actually manage, you know, 10 or more fantasy teams to the level that it needs to be managed. So, I mean, just kind of something to put in the back of your mind for the future when, you know, you decide next season, you know, how many leagues you're going to do. But, yeah. Eli, where can people follow you on Twitter and all that stuff?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, although I don't know why you would bother, because I haven't tweeted in, I think, 40 days.
Well, you've been very, very busy. I think everybody can kind of understand when you're kind of in the middle of a grind that you can't really get to everything all the time. So don't be hard on yourself. You'll definitely be participating in Twitter whenever the time comes. But it's definitely good for people to know your Twitter handle regardless. But let's get into some football, man. Week 2 is here. Week 1 was pretty crazy in itself. But, you know, let's preview some games, get everybody ready. I know this is coming out a day late. Justin and I had some kind of scheduling issues. So that's why you're with Eli and myself, and it should be pretty fun. So let's start off with the first game. We have the Bengals and the Steelers. The thing I'll kind of talk about here is the fact that I think the Steelers, you know, Jesse James is a pretty solid tight end play this week. I think everybody knows automatically, you know, the starts, you know, for both sides, really. But Jesse James was, you know, targeted a pretty good amount last week. And historically, I kind of mentioned this in the DFS podcast, historically, Heath Miller did a pretty good job against the Bengals. James was in on a ton of the snaps last week. So I think that this is a good opportunity for James to, you know, be a borderline tight end one this week. I have him ranked as my 15th tight end. I'd certainly think that there's room for him to improve on that. But yeah, that's what I'm going to talk about here for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Do you have anything that you want to bring up for this game?
Oh, yeah, I completely agree about James. He's a really big, really big target. I like him as a cheap option in DraftKings for DFS. You know, he got 7 targets last week. And other than Antonio Brown, it's going to be kind of a mixture each week. It might be Eli Rogers, or it might be Sammy Coates, or it might be Jesse James. One of those guys probably got to go off each week along with Antonio Brown just because they throw the ball so much. So, yeah, I love that call.
Yeah, and I just want to, you know, say this about the Steelers, because, you know, Marcus Wheaton, we don't know if he's going to be playing or not. It's still kind of up in the air whether he will. But as far as the other pass catchers, you have, you know, Eli Rogers there, then you have Sammy Coates, Darius Heyward-Bey, Jesse James, D'Angelo Williams, you know, and obviously Antonio Brown. For me personally, I love Brown, obviously, and you love D'Angelo Williams, especially now until Le'Veon Bell comes back. But outside of that, you know, Jesse James is the only guy that I'm, like, willing to possibly take a chance on in any season-long fantasy league. I don't know if you feel the same way, or are you hanging on to these Eli Rogers and Sammy Coates of the world, kind of hoping that they, you know, reclaim some wide receiver 2 value, at least in the short term?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you. It's going to be kind of a rotating thing at receiver, and you're not going to know who to rely on week to week. But Jesse James, he's the tight end. He's going to be on the field all the time. He doesn't have to compete with other tight ends. So, like I said, he's just such a humongous target. So, yeah, I think of all those guys, I think Jesse James is the one you want.
Still don't have a, you know, firm timetable on Ladarius Green. He's on the PUP list, so we know he's going to be out at least until week six. But, you know, after that, we still don't really know. We don't even know what's really going on with him, to be honest. We don't know if the concussion stuff is still a problem. I would just kind of monitor that as it goes. Some snap counts from last week for the Steelers wide receivers. Sammy Coates was had the second most snaps at 65%. And then Darius Heyward-Bey and Eli Rogers both were a little bit behind him. But, I just wanted to mention that. Do you have anything on the Bengals side or anything for this game that you want to bring up?
I mean, I think it's just standard that Dalton's a pretty decent option to start, I feel like. The Hill and Bernard situation is probably not going to change anytime soon. And it's AJ Green and not much else. I'm not counting on LaFell to repeat the 91 yards, or I don't think Tyler Boyd's ready to make an impact yet. I mean, he's certainly a guy to keep an eye on, but and obviously they have no tight end of note right now without Eifert. So start Green and start Hill or Bernard if you have to.
Yeah, Green's a wide receiver one this week. It's pretty obvious. He's had some massive games against Pittsburgh, especially over the last 2 years or so. So, I mean, that's a pretty obvious start. As far as the rest of the Bengals, Tyler Croft, I think, will have more of a role this week. I know a lot of people were on the CJ Uzoma or whatever, however you say that guy's name, the other tight end for Cincinnati. I know that Tyler Eifert will not be playing this week, but he is making some progress. So, you know, definitely keep that in the back of your mind if you're stashing him. And as bad as tight end was last week in week one, it's certainly looking like Tyler Eifert might be a guy that can make a decent impact whenever he does come back. But he's still a guy that I didn't draft anywhere because of the fact that his injury and, you know, his touchdown regression is just too big for me to really bank on for this season. But I think overall this is a game that is going to be kind of a real, not a shootout, but pretty close to it. Right now the over under is at 48.5, so I can see it being a pretty close game. But who do you pick overall? Right now we have Pittsburgh at -3.5 and the over under is again 48.5. Who do you got in this game?
Now are we, you asking me the straight winner or based on the spread?
You can do either or. I usually like to do it with the spread.
All right, well, I'll do what you're doing. So I'll do it by the spread. I'll go with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm going to take Pittsburgh -3.5 as well. Just to remind everybody, Justin Mason always puts out his picks on Sunday morning. He usually does, 6 to 7 bets every Sunday, and he tweets them out to everybody, so you can use those. I know he did very well last season. I think last week he went off to a 4-2 start, so pretty good with those lines is Justin Mason, so make sure that you follow him at Justin Mason.
Don't give him any credit.
Well, I mean, he is he's pretty good at it. You got to give him some credit, so, why not?
I'm not happy about it, though.
Why not? The next game we're going to talk about is the Titans and the Lions. What do you want to bring up for this game, Eli?
I'm very interested to see how Ameer Abdullah does. I know people getting really excited about Riddick, and he's certainly a very good option in PPR, but I think he's a little bit touchdown dependent in terms of standard leagues. But Abdullah's the guy with the upside. He looked really good. He had 12 carries for 63 yards. Also was very capable in the passing game. He actually had as many catches as Riddick. They both had 5, and they both had a touchdown receiving. So I'm very excited to see what he does. I'm starting him in the leagues that I have him in.
Yeah, I'm still a little worried about Riddick overall. I know a lot of people have kind of turned around on Riddick and said, you know what, like I'm completely in to have him as a running back 3 for PPR leagues, which I think that he has a solid floor. I mean, he ended up with 80 receptions last season, so that's not something that we can just scoff at and say, oh, you know, that's not repeatable at all. My problem with Ameer Abdullah is Dwayne Washington got the ball on the goal line last week, which means that, you know, if he ends up kind of thriving in that role, Dwayne Washington is a stud. He's a rookie. I have him on multiple Dynasty League teams. I think that he's going to be a star in this league. It might not start this season, but at some point he will be. But he's already getting goal line reps. And then you have Theo Riddick in on third downs. So that leaves Ameer Abdullah with, you know, everything kind of between the 20s, which is nice. And he did have an overwhelming lead in snaps. He had 62% of the snaps last week on offense versus Riddick, who had 37%, and then Dwayne Washington only got a couple. So, I mean, Abdullah is getting the majority of the reps. I do think he will get the majority of the touches as well. I think that he's a borderline running back 2 for the rest of the way. In terms of this week, I think that he's a solid play. I don't think that he's an amazing player or anything like that, but I do think that he's someone somebody that you can certainly use. Right now, I am at my 27th ranked running back. That's actually tied for the highest on FriendsWithFantasyBenefits.com with Eric Mackey. So I certainly think he's usable for this week. Theo Riddick, I have outside of the top 40, but we also base that on standard league scoring. If you're in PPR, I think he's more of a flex option.
Real quick, who do you like better, Golden Tate or Marvin Jones?
I like Marvin Jones. And
yeah, me too.
And it's because, I mean, he got 11 targets last week, and this offense just, I think, suits Marvin Jones better. If you don't recall, Anquan Boldin was signed this year, obviously, and he's kicked to the slot a lot more. And then last season, you know, Golden Tate was actually the one that got kicked to the slot a lot because, you know, Calvin Johnson would stay on the outside. Now, whenever Calvin Johnson was out, Golden Tate kind of continued to be used in the slot area. But Anquan Boldin is kind of assuming that role. Eric Ebron looks like he's finally starting to emerge a bit. So for me, it's not that I think that Golden Tate is a slouch or anything. I still think that he's going to be, you know, vying to, you know, lead the league in receptions or come close to it. But at the end of the day, I think that Marvin Jones possesses that wide receiver one upside in standard leagues and in PPR formats, just based on the way this Lions team is run and the way that they like to use their offense. So for me, it's Marvin Jones, but it's a little bit closer than I'm making it seem.
Yeah, I just like Marvin Jones better because I just feel like he's a lock to get more touchdowns. And yeah, I think Golden Tate will get more catches, but Marvin Jones will get plenty himself. They like to throw the ball around.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing I'll talk about for this game, you know, I was going to talk a little bit more Lions and Eric Ebron, and you know, specifically, if you recall, Kyle Rudolph had a pretty decent game against the Titans last week. So I do like Ebron for this week. I ended up talking about him in the DFS podcast as a possible play based on his price. He's a top 12 guy for me. So in season-long leagues, I certainly think that Ebron is a guy that could emerge as a top 10 tight end this year, especially, you know, depending on what happens with, you know, some of the top tier guys. Rob Gronkowski might not play again this week. We'll kind of get to that. Gary Barnage, we'll see what happens with him. Martellus Bennett. There's a lot of guys that we just don't know at the tight end position. So for Eric Ebron to do what he did last week, if he has another nice week against Tennessee, we could be seeing a guy starting to emerge and finally, you know, tap into some of that talent. But I do want to go over to the other side here and talk a little bit about the Titans. Tajae Sharpe looked like he was the top receiver for the Titans last week. He got the top amount of snaps based on the whole entire wide receiver core. He got the most targets. So my question to you, Eli, is do you believe in Tajae Sharpe as a guy that you can possibly start each and every week this season, or is he more of a bench option for you and you're kind of waiting and seeing?
Yeah, more of a bench, wait and see, bye week guy. I certainly got the potential. It's got to get a lot of looks. They don't exactly have a very talented receiving core other than Delanie Walker at tight end. So, you know, I like him. He went to the school I went to, UMass, so I'm rooting for him. He's obviously made a big impression early. It's very impressive what he's been doing in the preseason and now in the first game. So I just don't think I can start him quite yet. It's not like I love Mariota, but he's not exactly a boon to receivers at this point in his career.
Agreed. And I think that Sharp is a solid wide receiver four right now. He ended up with 7 for 76 in week one. That was top 30 numbers in PPR leagues. So, you know, the fact that I have him at 27 this week kind of is a little bit of improvement, but it is not necessarily meaning that I think he's going to be that going forward. I'm sorry, I totally botched that. He's 37. So I still have him as a bench option, but I think that that's about where he stays for season long as well in terms of, you know, where you're trying to rank him for the rest of the year. But let's pick this game. For me, it's Detroit minus six is the line, 47.5 over under. I'm going Detroit minus six. How about you?
I'll go Tennessee there, but I really don't like gambling, so I don't approve of this.
It's absolutely okay. Everybody's entitled to their opinion.
No, I'm just kidding. I love gambling, but I don't pick spreads though.
Ravens and the Browns is the next game we will talk about, which means that you know, after RG3. RIP to him, is going to go through shoulder surgery, probably won't be back this year. I am very, very sad about this. I really was rooting for RG3 to make a comeback and be serviceable for the Browns this year. It's not going to happen. So in comes Josh McCown. You know, Josh McCown last year was okay. I'm not going to sit here and say that he was a world beater or anything, but he was solid. But I automatically see a lot of people already turning to him as a guy that they can, you know, possibly pencil in as a top 15 to, you know, 18 quarterback. And this is my problem with that. Hugh Jackson is not the same coordinator. You know, he is certainly a run first guy. McCown is, you know, at this point in his life, you know, what is he, almost, you know, 35 years old, 36, somewhere in that region, maybe even older. And he's obviously injury prone as well. You know, I can't really bank on McCown being a difference maker, you know, in terms of, you know, fantasy quarterback wise. Though I think the main focus here is what the effect he has on Gary Barnage. And, you know, that is certainly something that, you know, everybody has talked about as well. When Barnage had Josh McCown on the field, he was certainly a close to top five tight end. You know, if you just kind of go through some of his game logs with Josh McCown, 6 for 105 and a touch, 6 for 75 and a touch, 8 for 139 and a touch, 3 for 39, 2 touchdowns, 6 for 101 yards, 7 for 53 and a touch. Those were all with Josh McCown at the helm. You know, so against Baltimore last year with Josh McCown, that was one of the games where he went 8 receptions for 139 and a touchdown. That would definitely lead me to believe that Gary Barnage will have a very nice game this week. But, you know, for me, I just don't bank on Josh McCown being a massive difference maker to this Browns offense. And I'm a little bit worried about my Josh Gordon shares, because I liked the fact that RG3's deep ball was still looking really good. And Josh Gordon, I think, could get back to that, you know, athletic level that he had a couple years ago. So for me, I'm a little worried about this Josh McCown replacing RG3 for the long term. But for this week, certainly Gary Barnage is back in play. I don't know about the other pass catchers. What do you want to talk about from this game?
Well, I certainly don't want to talk about Josh McCown. Like, he's a good backup, but, and maybe he does actually help that receiving core a little bit more than RG3 might have potentially, but I'm certainly not starting McCown anywhere. The options are just not all that great. And even, I mean, Barnage is kind of banged up. Gordon's out. Coleman and Pryor are really talented, but I mean, come on, they're basically rookie receivers. So I'm not excited about the Cleveland offense. And who knows what's going to happen between Crowell and Duke Johnson. Obviously, Crowell is the guy you want right now. But do you think Duke Johnson is going to start showing some stuff, or is it just going to be Crowell?
I like Duke Johnson, you know, long term, because I just don't think that this team is going to be very good in the long run. Philadelphia is pretty good at kind of holding together their defense, especially against receiving backs. So I think that that's kind of an explanation as to why Johnson wasn't didn't really do very well in week one. But Crowell certainly will be. There was actually a report this week that he was going to be getting the ball even more than he did last week. I think he went 16 for 72 and a touch in week one against Philly. Again, you know, I think 30 of those yards came in garbage time, so you can't really bank on a lot of that. And Crowell isn't a dynamic runner in his own right. So I have him as a running back 3 this week. Same with Duke Johnson. Again, we do standard scoring. If I was doing a PPR rank, I would definitely have Johnson in front of Crowell. But, you know, long term, I think that they're both Duke Johnson's certainly the one I want more of in any type of season long lead, because I think the upside is much, much greater. But I do think Crowell will be serviceable. You know, he's getting the red zone looks. He's certainly their goal line back. So I think that this is going to be very similar to a Jeremy Hill, you know, Giovanni Bernard situation that we've seen with Hugh Jackson in the past as well. You know, it's just really tough to bank on right now, you know, not knowing what's going to happen with Josh McCown at the helm. I do like Terrell Pryor, though. I know that you're not really into him, but
no, he's certainly got to be. I mean, he's really talented. He, you know, he can make a big play, and he's certainly got to keep an eye on. But I mean, I just can't imagine at any point in the near future to be confident to start him. I think he's like a touchdown, or like either it gets you a touchdown and you have a big day, or he gives you squad douche.
Yeah, very true. Anybody from this Baltimore offense, you know, for me, Mike Wallace, you know, he scored a touchdown last week. He did play on 65% of the snaps, which was tied with Steve Smith for the lead in the Baltimore Ravens receiver core. We saw Bershad Perriman make a couple of nice plays, but he was, again, you know, kind of questionable this week. It looks like he is going to play, but, you know, once again, kind of fighting off some injuries. But the main thing is that Kamar Aiken just kind of stunk up the joint and, you know, was still on 53% of the snaps. So, you know, for me, I don't know if you how you feel about Mike Wallace, but I'm starting to think that he is going to be the lead dog here for the wide receivers in Baltimore. But at the end, that also comes with the caveat of they have 4 guys that they legitimately could throw to each week, and you never will be able to pinpoint it.
Yeah, this does seem like a good fit for Mike Wallace. He's got a quarterback that can throw a pretty good deep ball, and that's what Mike Wallace can do, run long routes. So I think there'll be a little bit of a reemergence for Wallace, but this is just an offense, I feel like, for a good team, there's really not a lot of options you want in fantasy. Like, right now, the 4-set and Terrence West thing is a disaster, and then Kenneth Dixon might come back in, like, 3 or 4 weeks or so, and that might muddy that up even more. And then like you said, there's a lot of options to throw to. You got Wallace, Pitta, Perriman, Smith, Aiken. Like, who knows who's going to be the consistent one? Probably none of them. So, yeah, this is kind of a team that, for the most part, I just want to avoid.
Yeah, I hear you. I do want to just mention one more guy from this team, Dennis Pitta. I know that, you know, myself included, I had him just kind of written off for dead coming into this year. Last week, man, he had over 82% of the snaps for the, you know, the Ravens tight end core. The second guy was Crockett Gilmore with 44%. But again, you know, Dennis Pitta won this battle by a landslide in terms of playing time. Ended up only getting, you know, 4 targets, 3 receptions for 39 yards. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, when you're coming into this matchup against Cleveland, you certainly could do worse than Dennis Pitta. I think that, you know, if anything else, he should be on people's radars as a, you know, tight end two with the upside to, you know, be a little bit higher than that, you know, depending on whatever the matchup brings. But I just wanted to kind of mention Dennis Pitta because I think he is kind of making a little bit of a resurgence here and people might not notice it yet.
Yeah, I love that call. I love Pitta. I had him in Dynasty for a long time. I had to cut him loose because he just couldn't stay healthy. But now that he's healthy and seems to be a little bit of a focal point for Flacco, that's certainly to keep an eye out on him. And he could be a good DraftKings play too.
Yeah, I have him as one of my tight end plays on the DFS podcast as well. Got to give it up to the guy, man. Possibility, you know, he's had another hip surgery. The possibility of him just, I mean, actually, it was almost a surety, if that's even a word. It was almost assured that he would, you know, not be playing football for the rest of his life. And then all of a sudden makes a, you know, miraculous comeback along with Steve Smith, too. I mean, both of those guys, you got to give it up to them. Even if they do nothing the rest of this season, you got to give it up to them for, you know, going through a tenacious rehab process and getting back to the football field. I really respect what they've done. As far as the line, we have Baltimore -6. The over-under is 42.5. I am going to roll with Baltimore. How about you?
Yeah, sure, whatever.
You got to give a legitimate guess, man. You can't just be sitting here like, oh, whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah, I'll go Baltimore.
All right, next one that we're going to talk about is the Cowboys and the Redskins. Eli, tell me what you want to talk about on the Cowboys side.
I probably shouldn't be snacking while I'm podcasting.
It's okay. We all do it in some way.
All right, I'm going to continue to do it. Crunch, crunch, crunch. I don't know. Dallas scares me. I mean, like I said before, with Prescott, they're just going to stack the box, which hurts Ezekiel Elliott. And then, obviously, Dez Bryant's hurt without a real quarterback right now. And the only person who might even benefit whatsoever is, like, Jason Witten, because Prescott's just going to, you know, feed him 8-yard passes and try to move the chain slowly but surely. And so I do like Witten in PPR type of play, but Witten's never been a guy that gets a lot of touchdown catches. So I don't really love Witten in standard league. So I'm just not really excited about the Dallas offense right now in terms of fantasy. I don't know how you really could be, to be honest.
You being a Cowboys fan, is there anything like markedly different that you've seen from Dez Bryant, at least in week 1?
No, I mean, sometimes Dez just kind of disappears from games from time to time. Maybe it's because it's probably just because he's getting double-teamed like a crazy, like, all the time. I mean, why wouldn't you double-team him? Terrence Williams is kind of garbage. Cole Beasley's, you know, like the poorest man's Julian Edelman of all time. Like, he's white and he plays in the slot and catches, like, four balls a game. Congratulations, Beasley, you stink. I mean, why wouldn't you double team Dez all the time? This really the only option. I mean, that's why Witten is always free. So like, you let Witten beat you 8 yards at a time by just doubling Dez. So, I mean, Dez is so talented that he finds ways to be productive most of the time. But there are going to be weeks like this where he just disappears, and it's probably going to happen more and more with Prescott.
Yeah, I was not on Dez coming into this season, and I'm certainly not on Dez after, you know, week 1. My issue with it is not only the injuries and stuff, but just, you know, a rookie quarterback expecting him to go outside the numbers, which is where Dez kind of lives. He doesn't ever, you know, go into the slot and, you know, get receptions that way. He is the type of guy that, you know, he relies on, you know, muscling for touchdowns in the red zone and, you know, getting consistent targets. And I can just see this team, you know, turning into a run it team that, you know, really only targets him 7-8 times a game. And if one or two of those targets aren't coming in the red zone, then you're looking at, you know, borderline wide receiver 2 numbers, which is where I have him. I think he's a wide receiver 2 moving forward. I don't think that he is a wide receiver 1, which is where people were drafting him. I have him as my 20th ranked wide receiver for this week. So that kind of puts in perspective where I think, you know, Dez Bryant will kind of fall. Rashard Breeland is also pretty decent as well. I've heard a few people kind of talk about this. So as much as he's gotten, you know, humiliated on the national final, you know, stage a few times. Breland does have some talent. As far as some other things to talk about, we'll talk about, you know, Justin's Redskins a bit, since, you know, you and Justin are, you know, got a matchup this week. It's not even a big deal to you guys. I can't believe I haven't heard about this until now.
Maybe it's because neither of these teams are relevant in the NFC East, even though the NFC East stinks.
Yeah, it's going to be the Giants by a landslide, but I digress. I think that this is going to be kind of a mediocre week for Jordan Reed. Of all the teams last season that he faced, Dallas was one of the most difficult for him. In two games that he saw them, he went seven receptions total in those two games for 78 yards. Obviously, you know, very, very down from the other games that he was able to play in. But on the other end of things, I really like DeSean Jackson. He had a really nice game against Dallas last season. Didn't play in week 17 against them because, you know, it really didn't matter, but DeSean Jackson had 10 targets last week, looks to be fully healthy, and I don't think that I'm not really buying that anybody on Dallas can really cover somebody like DeSean Jackson in the open field. So I really like DeSean Jackson this week. I think that he is a borderline wide receiver 2-1 type guy right in that area. I would actually play, if you have the decision to play him or Dez Bryant because you have some other stud receivers, I would certainly go DeSean Jackson over Bryant, at least for right now, because I just feel a little bit more comfortable with DeSean Jackson. I don't think I would ever say that in my life. So
yeah, I agree with you. It's hard to argue that.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to touch on is Matt Jones. He stinks.
Yeah, he's terrible.
I said this from the get-go, and I'm maintaining it. Although, if there were for a team for him to go off against, it would be Dallas, because Dallas, the front seven, is not that good, especially the front four. It's pretty god-awful, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not really into – I mean, you're going to play Ezekiel Elliott no matter what because, you know, you draft him that high. You have to play him. And honestly, Washington's run defense kind of comes and goes. You know, last season they were pretty solid as a whole. But this year they obviously, you know, had a big day that they gave up last week. So it's kind of tough to really gauge where they're at defensively. But, you know, I have Ezekiel Elliott as a top 10 running back for this week. I don't think there's really much argument in that. As far as the other side of things with Matt Jones, I don't even know, you know, how far down I have him ranked. I have him as a borderline running back 3 as a flex option at 29. I wasn't really excited about what he did last week. And I don't think that the tide is going to change, you know, much going forward, at least until I see something markedly change in his profile or just the scheme in general. I think that the Washington, you know, Redskins are going to pretty much be a pass heavy team and, you know, probably sprinkle in some run attempts here and there. Let's see, the line is Washington -3 as of right now with a 45.5 over under. Eli, who are you taking?
Washington and the over.
Wow. I will also take Washington and the over as well. Let's see. A game that's probably going to be going over itself is the Giants and the Saints. This one is going to be at home in the MetLife Stadium for the Giants. The thing I'll talk about is just this Saints offense. You know, is this team going to be able to repeat what they did last week against a Giants defense that kind of has some mixed reviews? Some people think that they are more improved from last season. Some others think that they are still absolute trash. For me, I think that this is not going to be nearly as good of a week. I know that's not like necessarily a hot take, but, you know, last year, this team, this matchup actually, you know, garnered what, 13 total touchdowns between the two teams. I have Drew Brees as my number 2 quarterback going into this week. So I don't think that that's really something that you're, you know, worried about as far as, you know, playing him or not. But overall, I don't think that this is going to be nearly as much of a shootout as it was last season. And, you know, there is some weather concerns going into this game. It's something that we certainly should keep our eye on. But, you know, overall, you know, you go through the Saints offense, you know, you have Brandon Cooks, Willie Snead, Kobe Fleener, Mark Ingram, all the plays as a whole, I think are, you know, automatic starts. If I am going to touch on one, it's going to be Kobe Fleener. He only got 4 targets last week, and I have him as my 16th ranked tight end for this week. But I do think that there's a chance that he could, you know, have a decent game. I know that he's still trying to understand the playbook and everything, but the Giants were second worst in terms of fantasy points per game to the tight end position last year. They gave up 10 receptions to Jason Witten in week 1. So I certainly think that Kobe Fleener could be a guy that you use at least in season long for this week, especially with tight end being just kind of a landmine right now. So for this week, I think Kobe Fleener is a possible start. What do you think about this game, Eli?
Yeah, I mean, I think this game's pretty self-explanatory. It's probably going to be pretty high scoring, and the guys you're starting are pretty obvious. I love Ingram this week. I feel like he's going to have a monster game. Cooks is incredible. I'm sure Willie Snead won't be able to duplicate that, catching all nine of his targets for 172. But he's really good, and he's the clear number two target in this offense. And obviously they're going to throw a ton, so you got to love him. Beckham's a stud. And you got to start Jennings. It's never sexy, but he's going to give you like 70 yards and maybe gets a touchdown. And then Shepherd and Cruz are two guys that certainly have the potential to do damage. It's going to be tough to know which one, but you could do worse at the wide receiver three or flex spot, I suppose.
Yeah, that's something I didn't mention is, you know, the Giants side here. I really like Rashad Jennings this week. I have him as my 13th ranked running back, which is, you know, essentially a running back one for this week. The Saints are absolutely hideous on defense. It doesn't matter which spot you choose. They are just terrible across the board. Last year, they were bottom five in pretty much every position in terms of fantasy points per game. The running back position, I don't think is any different. I know they let Jalen Richard run for an 80-yard touchdown last week. A guy who I really like in Jalen Richard, so I don't want to take anything away from that. But at the end of the day, the Saints defense is absolutely hideous, so I think that that's a great mention in terms of Rashad Jennings. Looking at the snap count last week for the Giants receivers, obviously Odell Beckham led the way, but Victor Cruz was in on 89% of the snaps from the wide receiver position, and Sterling Shepard was in on 95%. So it looks like the Giants are going with a three wide receiver base, which is pretty understandable with the skill position players that they have. So it is something to kind of monitor going forward. You know, how many receptions and targets some of these guys get. OBJ is obviously going to be the guy that leads the way here, but it will be interesting to see how Sterling Shepard and Victor Cruz are, you know, kind of used in terms of, you know, the pieces of the pie in the puzzle here, you know, because if the offense as a whole is giving up 30 targets and, you know, 10 of them are going to OBJ automatically, then we want to see, you know, which guys on this team are going to be getting a slice of that. So, you know, for this week, I definitely like Sterling Shepard. He was mentioned in the DFS podcast along with a couple other Giants. So we don't really need to go into that, but, you know, pretty much start everybody across the board here. But again, be at least worried about the weather a little bit. I know that there's some chances of inclement weather coming in. So just keep your eye on that. The Giants are favored by 5 and the 53.5 over under. Eli, who are you taking?
I'll take the Saints.
I'm going to take the Giants. I just feel like they are a better team. It's at home for them. The Saints defense, I just don't think can stop them at all. And I think the Giants could stop the Saints a couple times. So, I mean, there's nothing really, you know, statistically that is giving me an answer here. I just think that the Giants are a better team. Next game, we're going to talk about the 49ers and the Panthers. For me, the thing that I want to talk about is Jeremy Curley. Because he, a lot of people were giving buzz to Bruce Ellington coming into this season because he was going to be playing a lot of the slot. And, you know, a Chip Kelly-led offense usually is really good for tight ends and the slot receiver. Jeremy Curley kind of gets signed, comes in, gets 11 targets, 7 receptions for 61 yards. The secondary for Carolina really isn't that good, but the fact that Curley is playing the majority of the snaps and getting a ton of targets is definitely good for PPR owners. I think that he's an automatic add in PPR leagues, no matter what size, really. I mean, if you're in a 10-team league, then you don't necessarily have to, you know, grab a guy like Curley. But I do think in 12-team leagues or deeper, he's a viable add for right now based on his usage and based on the offense that's being run. In week one, they had the fourth highest pace in terms of, ranks in terms of their time having the ball. So I think that San Fran is going to continue that. They obviously, Philly was in the top five in terms of pace over the last couple of years with Chip Kelly. So this will be something that continues. So, Jeremy Curley, definitely pick him up. I think that he's a usable guy for this week. Eli, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I guess that's reasonable. But the only person on San Fran that I have any interest in whatsoever is Carlos Hyde. Big fan of him. Think he's really talented. I know he's going up against a Carolina defense, but I certainly would be starting him anyway. I just can't imagine anyone else on this team being viable consistently at any point this season with Blaine fucking Gabbert and one of the most depressing collection of receivers I've seen in a while. It really rivals what the Rams have been putting out there for the last, 5 years.
I mean, did you watch the Monday night game? I hope that you didn't, because you did yourself a favor if you didn't watch the Monday night game. But
I was out drinking, and it was on the TV. Every once in a while, I'd look up, and then I'd puke, and then I'd go back to drinking.
Yeah, I would just rinse and repeat, do that again whenever you watch the Rams this season, because it was that bad. But I have Carlos Hyde as a running back two essentially this week. CJ Anderson obviously went off against Carolina, but I don't think there's much to really gain from seeing CJ Anderson do that, because he is a special talent that I feel is just healthy for right now. So the fact that he's doing that isn't really a shocker to me. But Carlos Hyde is, you know, kind of right there. So, you know, running back two is solid. Is there anything that you want to talk about on the other side with the Panthers? Obviously Cam Newton, for me, he's my number one quarterback this week. But is there any pass catchers other than Kelvin Benjamin you're looking at, and Greg Olsen, obviously?
No, I mean, obviously, Funchess is a guy that got a lot of buzz in the preseason, so he's talented. Certainly keep your eye out on him, but he's got to do it, for 2 weeks in a row for me to start considering putting him in the lineup. He's just too inconsistent, too young, too raw. I'm going to certainly monitor him, but I'm not playing him anytime soon.
Yeah, he didn't get enough snaps for me, last week. So he's just somebody that I'm just going to kind of stash for now. For me, that's pretty much all I'm looking from the Panthers is Cam Newton, Greg Olsen, Kelvin Benjamin. Then obviously you'll throw Jonathan Stewart in there. I have him as a running back too, essentially, for this week as well. So that kind of does it for this game.
Yeah, Cam runs too much for them to have three consistently viable pass catchers. I mean, Benjamin and Olsen are so good, they're always going to be there, but it's just going to be hard for Funchess to really emerge, I think.
Yeah, I mean, from a DFS perspective, I do think that Carolina goes off this week, because if you think about it, the last two games that they've played that has counted, they've gotten absolutely walloped by the Denver Broncos. So I think they're really pissed off. This is going to be their first home game since the NFC Championship last year. So I think that they're going to come in and absolutely slaughter San Francisco. I don't think it's going to be even a close matchup, which means that, I think, Jeremy's Jonathan Stewart. I almost call him Jeremy Stewart because I'm looking at Jeremy Curley's page, which means that Jonathan Stewart could certainly be a solid play this week. But I also think that, again, Cam Newton is the one that really is the biggest benefactor here, which is why I have him as my top quarterback this week. I know it's not a hot take, but I just see a lot of people that don't have him up there, which I just don't understand why. At the end of the day, I think that they're just going to absolutely slaughter, San Fran. It's not going to be close. Greg Olsen, are you worried about it all? Because, I mean, he did get 9 targets and 7 receptions in week 1. But at some point, I think myself at least, I'm worried about the health long term. And with all these other, with Devin Funchess specifically, kind of growing a bit, I'm getting a little worried that eventually Greg Olsen will not be somebody that we can count on week in and week out. And he's already been kind of an inconsistent guy in standard formats anyways. So do you think that over the course of this season, we could see Greg Olsen kind of become more of an inconsistent, 5-8 tight end as opposed to a top 5 guy every week?
No, I completely disagree with that assessment. I think it's just too good, and they only have 2 consistent weapons, and with the threat of Cam running, that leaves guys like Olsen open. So I think Olsen's going to be, I'd be shocked if he wasn't in the top 5.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I mentioned that is because I talked about it this offseason, because he had 4 or less targets in 3 of the last 4 games, last season. And on top of that, Funchess, that was also during the time where Funchess was kind of, getting up in terms of his targets and developing a bit more. So that was just kind of something I was, thinking about in the offseason. Obviously, week 1 has, shown me otherwise. He's still an absolutely fine player, and I don't think he isn't. I just, it's just something that I have in the back of my mind for the rest of this season as it plays out. Just something that I want to think about. But, obviously, as of right now, Greg Olsen is still an absolute stud. There's nothing to worry about. As far as picking this game, Carolina has a -13.5 line at the moment with a 45 over under. I'm just taking Carolina and everything. How about you?
Yeah, normally I would avoid a line that big. I never pick the team to cover that big of a spread, but I think this is one of those times that they do cover. It's just too good of a team against too bad of a team. I know San Fran just won 28-0, but does anyone really believe in that?
Not really. The next game we're going to talk about is the Miami Dolphins visiting the New England Patriots. The thing I'll talk about is LeGarrette Blount. He received the 4th highest rushing total rushes last week in week 1. He had 70 yards on 22 rushes for a touchdown. I think that this is going to be a game that New England pretty much dominates. Not to the point where they're going to crush him on the scoreboard, but I think that they end up dominating the game overall, which means that LeGarrette Blount will probably end up with a ton of carries again and be a solid running back too for this week. I have him as one of my mentions in the DFS podcast as well. But overall, that's my main thing that I'm worried about in this game. How about you?
I think this game's going to look a lot like week 1 did for the Patriots. Garoppolo's going to do fine. They're not going to ask him to do too much. He's going to manage the game, and LeGarrette will get a fair amount of touches, but we'll probably get in the end zone. Edelman will get a ton of catches like he always does, and maybe Hogan gets another touchdown. But for the most part, I think you just want to start Blunt, Edelman, and that's about it right now.
Yeah, I'm not really looking at any of the Patriots pass catchers, at least for the moment. I do think that Rob Gronkowski will be held out. There's multiple reports that he could play, and then there's other reports that say he couldn't. Me personally, I'm gonna take the stance as of right now on Friday when we're recording this that he's not going to play. He still during practice has not really gone through the routes. He kind of just stands there and is letting the practice go. So for me, that kind of is a strong sign. Especially the fact that he didn't travel last week to play Arizona just tells me that he more than likely will not play this week, which means that we'll have to have Martellus Bennett be the main tight end for this week. I have Martellus Bennett as a top 12 option. I don't trust it at all, though. I think that the Patriots are going to use him to block the majority of the time like they did last week, which is really disappointing for fantasy. If you drafted Martellus Bennett, I think the best case scenario is for Gronk to be on the field. I think that's where he will gain a lot more receptions and targets because a lot more people will be covering Gronk and kind of leaving Martellus Bennett open and giving him more opportunity to kind of score and get his receptions and all that stuff. So until further notice, when Gronk returns, I think Martellus Bennett is kind of a borderline sit for the most part. Anything else you want to talk about in this game on the Dolphins side? Arian Foster looks like he's going to play. Jay Ajayi might actually make the trip out and not be a temper tantrum little baby about things. But other than that, I don't think that this is going to be a situation where Miami just completely get steamrolled because they did go into Seattle for their credit. They went into Seattle and made it a really good game. They just ended up kind of losing in the end. The Dolphins, though, usually play better against the Patriots at home in Miami than they do on the road. But overall, I think that this is just a game where, Jarvis Landry and Arian Foster are probably going to be the only guys that you play, and then other than that, from a fantasy perspective, you're going to be out, right?
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. I was going to say the exact same thing. I love Landry. I'm always playing him. Foster's not the best play this week, but I do definitely think you got to have him in your lineup.
Yeah, in PPR leagues, he has a safe floor because he's consistently getting five or so targets. Throughout the preseason, he flashed that he can still catch the ball and make some moves in the open field. So I think especially in PPR leagues, that Foster is still a solid running back two in those formats. Jarvis Landry in PPR is still a borderline wide receiver one. So take that for what it's worth. We have the Patriots -6.5 with a 42 over and under. I'm going to go with the Patriots. How about you?
Same thing.
Chiefs and Texans. I mean, I don't know about you, man, but Will Fuller just absolutely looks amazing. I feel like I kind of shortchanged him a bit coming into this year. I definitely compared him a ton to Ted Ginn Jr., who obviously took a couple years to really get involved with the league in general. I mean, he ended up kind of bouncing around a bit and really finally finding a home in Carolina. But Will Fuller was really impressive in week one. He could have had an even bigger game, but had 11 targets, 5 receptions for 107 yards and a touchdown. He's another guy that in DFS I'm certainly willing to kind of take a chance on this week. Overall, I think that this is going to be a really solid game for the Texans. You're obviously starting Lamar Miller. I think Brock Osweiler is even a viable quarterback option if you need him for this week. But in two quarterback leagues, I think he's certainly a nice quarterback too. But Hopkins, Will Fuller, and Brock Osweiler, Lamar Miller are certainly solid plays for this week for me. Anything that you want to mention in this game?
No, I think you nailed it. Obviously, Lamar Miller is going to be great. I kind of agree with Osweiler. I'm kind of optimistic about him. I think he's pretty solid. He's obviously got two dynamic receiving options in Hopkins and Fuller. I kind of regret not taking Fuller in Dynasty. I could have had him with the sixth pick or something, and I had really great receiver depth, so I'm like, I'll just try to get another running back. I took Kenneth Dixon, and obviously he's hurt right now, but hopefully that works out for me. But obviously Will Fuller seems to be pretty special, and that's going to be a really sick receiving combo for a long time.
Yeah, he did drop an 80-yard touchdown, so the line could have been even bigger, but he's just so dynamic. I remember him catching a 10-yard reception, and he turned it into a 35-yarder just in the blink of an eye because he is so dynamic in the open field. He probably crossed up 5 or 6 defenders without even thinking about it. The KC defense is certainly not the same. Sean Smith is obviously not there anymore. He's in Oakland. Justin Houston isn't there there yet. Tamba Hali isn't nearly as good. So, you know, really, if you're looking at a defense with pretty much only Marcus Peters, that's, you know, a defense that you can certainly exploit. On the Kansas City side, you know, is there anybody that you're really, you know, starting other than Spencer Ware and Jeremy Maclin and Kelsey?
Yeah, those are three. I'm really confident with all three. It looks like Charles is out again. So Ware's going to get a ton of looks, both running and receiving. Great PPR play. Definitely like him in DFS as well. Kelsey, it's about as solid and reliable as it gets. You do wish he would get in the end zone a little bit more often, but you know he's going to get his 5-plus catches and 70-plus yards. So he's going to give you at least 7 points in fantasy just about every week. And Maclin, you know, people give Alex Smith crap, and they used to make fun of Kansas City for never getting the receiver's touchdowns, but that's kind of changed now, and Macklin's pretty solid and pretty consistent, so I'm rolling with him too, absolutely.
Agreed. Any Alex Smith love for you? I mean, he didn't do terrible, you know, in week one. He actually had a pretty nice game against San Diego, but a lot of that was in the second half, so, I mean, are you kind of banking on that, or are you, you know, just kind of letting Alex Smith go for this week?
I mean, I'm probably not going to start him, but in a 2QB league, I think he's like the ideal guy to have because you drafted him incredibly late. He's really consistent. He may not have a lot of monster games, but he's always going to get you enough points at the QB2 spot, and you don't have to put much investment in him. So I really like him, and he's a decent bi-week fill-in too.
Absolutely. I have Alex Smith as my 26th quarterback for this week. I have Osweiler at 19. In terms of the running backs, I have Spencer Ware at number 8 for now, but that is certainly going to change because of the fact that he's been injured a lot this week. I also didn't like the split in snaps that him and Kendrick West had. It was a lot closer than I thought it initially was. I think Spencer Ware only beat him out by about 3 snaps, which certainly means to me that if Houston is up in this game, that Kendrick West could be on the field a lot more than we're kind of you know, giving him credit for. So regardless, I think Ware is certainly a play, and we've, you know, already talked about all these guys. So with that said, are you going to take the Chiefs plus 2.5 or Houston minus 2.5 with a 43 over under?
I'll go Houston.
I'm gonna go Houston as well. Let's make this next one pretty quick. Seahawks and Rams. Are you worried about Todd Gurley? That would be simply what I ask you.
No, but obviously not the exact matchup you want Gurley to have after a struggle in week one. But the Gurley's too talented. He'll right the ship a little bit. But again, kind of like with the Ezekiel Elliott situation, opposing teams are going to stack the box like nobody's business because I dare them to get beat by Case Keenum. So I put like 10 guys in the box. And it's like just put one guy on Austin and put 10 guys on Gurley.
Well, breaking news, right? Jared Goff is now the number 2 quarterback for the Rams, so he's moving up in the world. Gurley I have as my number 10 running back for this week. Last season against Seattle in week 16, he went on 19 touches. He went for 85 yards and a touchdown. He also chipped in a 7-yard reception. I'm not worried about Gurley, for now at least. I think that, you know, week one is week one. NFL teams are, you know, very good at what they do. Again, the Rams couldn't have – there's literally nothing they could have done to look worse in week one, literally nothing. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But I think that Gurley is going to be fine for this season. There's nothing to really worry about for me. He's still the focal point of this offense. And he was so limited in camp. Nobody – you know, they were trying to protect him so much. He really didn't get ready for the season in a proper way, in my opinion. So it might take him a couple weeks to get going. But, you know, I think he's still a running back one, still a top 5 guy for me on the season. I just haven't ranked as a running back 10 for this week based on how bad the Rams offense looked last week. On the other side of things, we have the Seahawks, who officially named Thomas Rawls as their starter for this week, kicking Christine Michael kind of back to his backup job here. For me, I think that this is still a situation that I want to avoid, especially for DFS. But in terms of, you know, season-long fantasy, it's hard to kind of pinpoint where you want to go with either one. For now, I still have Michael a bit ahead of Thomas Rawls, but that can certainly, you know, flip-flop. They're essentially right next to each other. They're both flex plays. I have Michael actually at 37 and Rawls at 30. My bad. I forgot I flipped them already. So essentially in season long, you can use them as flex options, but, you know, both of them don't really inspire much confidence because, you know, they're probably not going to be getting the majority of the work. Doug Baldwin and Russell Wilson are still pretty safe options. But other than that, I think you can kind of, you know, just let everything else go. Tyler Lockett still remains on the bench for me.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree with anything you said. I do think Rawls emerges a little bit slowly but surely here. I definitely prefer Rawls this week, and I think it's only a matter of time before he kind of regains a little bit from what he had last year. So I'm pro Rawls over Michael, but, you know, it could be a little bit of an annoying situation for a while.
Yeah, I can see this being an annoying situation for the season, to be honest with you. It just seems like something that could certainly be annoying. You know, both of them were almost identical in rushes and in receptions last week. So, you know, I think that this will be something that continues at least until Rawls emerges. I do like Michael as a talent more than Rawls. So that's kind of my problem here. For now, at least, if you have Michael and Rawls, you'd kind of just have to hold for this week. Since Rawls is the starter, I would go with Rawls over Michael, especially based on my rank. But this is something that we'll have to monitor. Do not drop Christy Michael until this all gets sorted out.
Oh, definitely agree. Do you worry at all about Russell Wilson not running as much, or do you think he's going to pick it up in terms of running?
The ankle injury isn't as much of a concern for me this week, but I do think it's going to be a couple weeks before he runs at the, you know, pace that he was last season. So if you're banking on Russell Wilson rushing a ton these next couple of weeks, I would kind of pump the brakes there. For me, it's just kind of something that we're going to have to wait on for him. Last year against the Rams, he had 31 rushing yards in one of the games, and then in another one of the games, he had 39. So I think automatically you have to kind of take that down to, you know, maybe even zero at this point, because you can't count on him rushing. But it's a big part of his game. In the majority of his games last year, he rushed for at least 30 yards or more. So that's something that we certainly need to monitor. But again, he only had one rushing touchdown for the season. So it's not, you know, as much as it's prevalent that, you know, he needs to run to maintain fantasy value, it's not like the end all be all. He's still a talented passer as well.
How many times do you think Jimmy Graham finishes in the top 10 among tight ends?
Zero.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's going to be a couple times. But, I mean, just the fact that you said that, and I can't really disagree all that much, that he's just not fantasy viable anymore.
Well, based on his game logs last year, I think that we can say that he finished in the top 10 four times. He had five games. He had five games last year where he had over 75 receiving yards or more, but he only had two touchdowns. So, you know, I think, you know, it's a miraculous that he even came back from this injury as fast as he did. You know, for me, it's just kind of something that, you know, I wasn't on Graham coming into the season. And, you know, the fact that he has come back and is, you know, going to start to, you know, bring his snaps back up. I mean, he only played in 17 in week one, which tells me that he's probably going to double that this week. He'll probably play in, you know, 30-ish snaps, you know, but we probably can't bank on Jimmy Graham even being 100% until week four or five. And then at that point, we'll get what we got last season from him, which wasn't much. You know, he only had four or five finishes in the top 10. So if we automatically erase four or five weeks for him to get up to speed, then we're looking at, you know, possibly 11 games in which he can possibly be a top 10 guy. You know, so maybe I'm kind of shortchanging him. Maybe he can, you know, finish as a top 10 guy once or twice this season, but this just isn't the scheme for him at all. Let's pit this game. Seattle. Minus 6.5. All right, let's go ahead. Jaguars and Chargers. What do you want to talk about this game?
Oh, man, that's not the one I thought we were talking about next. I'm all flustered here.
Oh, my bad. See, the way that I do it is I look on ESPN and I go, you know, based on their, you know, their guys and or their games in a row. But the next game should be the Buccaneers and Cardinals.
Yeah, how could you skip your team?
Well,
man,
that's my favorite team, and it's up on top. Yes, so yes. I talked about them. You know, I was supposed to talk about them right now, but, you know, they were up at the top. Either way, I got a little flustered there. So
talk
Buccaneers
about your
and
Bucks.
Cardinals.
Talk about your Bucks.
Well, first off, Jameis Winston is going to be a top, possibly top eight, you know, quarterback option this year. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. For this week, I'm a little worried about the team overall. I still think Winston is, you know, a start in two quarterback leagues. I have him as my 17th quarterback for this week, which actually is the lowest on the site, which is messed up. I can't believe everybody is higher on him than I am. But this is still a pretty tenacious Arizona defense. There's still some things that, you know, Winston still has some things that he needs to work on. He's still a bit turnover prone. So I think that he's a quarterback too for this week. In terms of Mike Evans, I think that he's another guy that, you know, is going to be covered by possibly a top five corner, you know, in Patrick Peterson. I still have him as a top 10 wide receiver for this week. So I still think that you put Mike Evans in no matter what. He's an every week start. But at the end of the day, I still wouldn't expect for him to go off or anything like that. Doug Martin is still a running back one. There's not much to really gain here. I think that this is going to be, you know, you start those three guys. Charles Sims is more of a borderline flex option in your deeper formats. But if you could, I wouldn't, you know, want to start him. I have him ranked as, you know, essentially a running back four for this week at 39 in my running back ranks. But again, those are standard. If I was doing PPR, he'd be more of a flex option. But overall, I don't expect this to be a great offensive week for the Bucs. You know, Arizona is a pretty tough defense.
Yeah, you know your Bucs, so I can't disagree with anything you said. I think it's pretty straightforward with the Bucs these days. I'm interested what you think of the tight end situation between Seferian Jenkins and Breed. I know it's not that big of a deal in terms of fantasy, but I'm just interested if you think Seferian Jenkins can emerge at some point and become the kind of player that people thought he would be.
Yeah, I think it's really tough for me, right? Because, you know, Seferian Jenkins did catch a touchdown last week, which was nice. And in terms of, you know, the targets, however, Cameron Brate was the leader in terms of the tight ends. The problem here is that the Buccaneers are rostering four tight ends. And you have Brandon Myers, Luke Stocker, Cameron Brate, and Austin Seferian Jenkins. Brandon Myers and Luke Stocker are both primarily guys that block. Now, with that said, Brandon Myers did catch a touchdown in week one, so you'll take that for what it's worth. But it's pretty apparent that Seferian Jenkins is the most talented of the group. In terms of the snap count for last week, Luke Stocker was actually the leader, and that, again, is because he is a very good blocker. Cameron Brate was second with 39% of the snaps, and then Austin Seferian Jenkins only got 18 snaps. So he only had that one reception on that one target for a 30-yard touchdown, which is nice to see. Obviously, we can't bank on that. But, you know, if you're looking at this from a fantasy lens, Austin Seferian Jenkins is certainly the guy that you want to keep your eye on. Cameron Brate is serviceable in, like, deep PPR formats because I do think that he'll, you know, have a decent, you know, target floor. Jameis Winston has always targeted his tight ends pretty heavily. But in terms of raw upside, Seferian Jenkins still has a little bit of hope for this year. We'll just kind of have to take a little bit of time and hopefully get him to run a few more routes and get implemented into the offense a bit more. So it's just going to be something that takes some time. But if I have to bank on a guy, it will definitely be Cameron Brate in terms of being the safer option and, you know, just having a higher floor because, you know, he's been consistently getting targets since about midway last season. You want to talk about anybody on the Cardinals here? Or
yeah, I feel like there's only one real topic. Obviously, you're starting Palmer and you're starting David Johnson, but and Fitzgerald. I'm just very interested what you think about the Floyd and Brown situation. I mean, Fitzgerald's pretty consistent. You know he's going to get his, but is it going to be just a disaster week to week deciding whether Floyd or Brown will be enough to will get enough points to be in your lineup? I know they're both talented. I know they're both capable of getting 1,000 yards, but like, how many yards can this team throw for every week?
For me, Larry Fitzgerald, I mean, he got those two touchdowns last week and he still looked solid, but this isn't a guy that is all of a sudden going to, you know, bust out with a ton of upside. I think people are giving him way too much credit for week one and what he did. You know, the last few weeks of the year in 15, I'm sorry, he wasn't that great. I mean, for PPR leagues, he had a solid floor, but, you know, only two touchdowns in the second half of this season. That's not something that, you know, tells me he has a ton of upside. He didn't eclipse 100 yards in the second half of this season, except for one time in week 10, which is fine, but it doesn't show a lot of upside for me. Michael Floyd is still my preferred option in terms of the pass catchers here for Arizona. He is still getting a ton of reps. He had 95% of the snaps in week one, just one snap behind Larry Fitzgerald. John Brown is your apparent wide receiver or third option here for me. He's the guy that is still coming back from an injury, a concussion problem, I believe, in the preseason. He only played on 35 of the snaps in week one. He is still a deep threat, and I like him a lot, but he's a wide receiver four. I still think Michael Floyd is a wide receiver two, and I think Larry Fitzgerald is also a wide receiver two. So that's the way I kind of look at it for the rest of the year. I think Michael Floyd is going to start turning it up, and it might start this week.
All right, fair enough. I'm just hoping for John Brown since I have him in three sport, but.
Yeah, he's a wide receiver four, and I'm sure the second half of the year will lend to more opportunities for him to play and have a more significant role. But, you know, and Fitzgerald is no lot to stay healthy either. I think people are just way overhyping Fitz based on 1 week.
So I'm assuming I should be starting Stephon Diggs at wide receiver three instead?
Yes.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, Arizona has a -7 line, 15.5 over under. Who are you taking, Eli?
Tampa Bay.
I'm taking Tampa Bay with that line for sure. And I think Tampa Bay could possibly win this game. I know I'm a homer, so you know, take that for what it's worth as well. But
we're the complete opposite kind of homers. I'm like doom and gloom. I think they're going to lose every goddamn time, and you're delusional.
I'm not delusional. I mean, Arizona.
No, I know. I'm
great. They haven't looked great
for a reason. Yeah, they're on the come up, man.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I'm not going to try and overblow the Bucks come up here. I mean, Dirk Cutter isn't some magician or anything, so it's not like they're all of a sudden going to be a 14-2 team or something. But the Cardinals just haven't looked good in the preseason. They really didn't look that great in week one either. So, you know, for me, I'm just not that impressed with them. Again, you know, I think that the Cardinals being a -7 favorite shows you that they should be favored. But I'm going to take the Bucks with the points. Hopefully they end up coming out with the win. But I definitely think they can come within that 7-point that 7-point spread. The next game we'll talk about here, the one that I kind of jumped ship on pretty fast, is the Jaguars and Chargers. Eli, talk a little bit so I can catch my breath.
Yeah, all you do is talk. I still think Woodhead and Melvin Gordon are, you know, clear flex options.
Melvin Gordon scored, Eli. Oh, my God.
He scored twice. It's unbelievable. Yeah, I'd start both. I hate, having two running backs on a team and then you start both. But this is one of those rare situations where you totally can. I'm encouraged by Melvin Gordon getting in the end zone twice. Obviously, Woodhead, he just always manages to be productive. It doesn't matter. The guy's so reliable. What I'm interested in is what happens with Keenan Allen gone. Does Tyrell Williams emerge? Does Travis Benjamin become an even better PPR play? Is Gates going to get more involved? I don't know. I think it's going to be a little bit of a mess at receiver, and it's going to be tough to rely on anyone week to week.
Yeah, I think that this offense as a whole just takes a massive step down. With that said, you know, I really like Tyrell Williams. He had a nice end to the season in 2015. Two receptions for 71 yards in week one here on 5 targets. Pretty nice to see. I think that the biggest beneficiary of all of this is Danny Woodhead. He's just going to remain on the field. He is a borderline running back one in PPR leagues when Keenan Allen is out, which, you know, it's so unfortunate for Allen, right? Because I really loved him as a player. It sucks that he is going through this. I mean, it's a terrible situation overall. But as far as Danny Woodhead goes, I think that he is a surefire guy to end up being at least a running back two in standard formats from this point forward. He's still got the majority of the red zone looks, which is what we were kind of talking about in the preseason. He is the preferred red zone back. Even though Melvin Gordon scored twice, I think that Woodhead is going to be on the field more. As far as Tyrell Williams, I think that he's a nice shot in the dark wide receiver four from this point forward. I don't think that he's going to average 8 or 9 targets a game, but I do think that he can average somewhere between 5 and 7 or something like that, which, with his deep speed and athleticism can certainly yield to some nice fantasy production overall. I think we'll see a step up from Gates as well. But for this week in particular, I really like TJ Yeldon. Chris Ivory has officially been declared out for this week. So that's definitely a boost for TJ Yeldon. The fact that he did terrible against Green Bay is certainly not something that's going to instill confidence in anybody. But I do have him as my number 14 running back for this week, which is markedly higher than Eric Mackey and Ben Brennis on the site. Justin's right there with me. He has him at 13. So both he and I are on the same wavelength there. But San Diego was bottom three in terms of rushing defense and fantasy points per game given up to running backs last season. I think Jacksonville will certainly do their best to make sure that Yeldon gets the ball a ton. I definitely like Allen Hurns a lot in this game. Logan Verrett is going to be on Allen Robinson for the most part, but again, you're still going to play him as well. But for the season, I think that San Diego's pie just kind of got a little bit smaller. I know Sigmund Bloom from Football Guys kind of mentions that, you really need to look at the size of the pie as opposed to, whenever somebody goes down, just keeping it about the same and then just slotting somebody else in there. I think the San Diego offense, gets a big boost or a big kind of drop in production overall, which means that even though Tyrell Williams will get a significant uptick in snaps and everything, that you can't really expect him to just all of a sudden fulfill Keenan Allen's shoes and get 8 to 10 targets every single week.
Yeah, well said. I can't disagree with that. And I also agree with Jacksonville. I think you start all 5 of these guys, Bortles, Yeldon, the 2 receivers, and Thomas.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's pick the game. San Diego is a 3-point favorite. I don't know how. They have a 47.5 over-under at home. I'm going to go with the Jaguars. How about you?
Yeah, me too. I'm also going to, like I did with the Stephon Diggs and John Brown, I'm going to cheat and ask for your advice one more time. Antonio Gates or Jesse James?
I'm going Gates.
Yeah, I figured, but, I just worry about Gates a little bit.
For anybody else that has these types of questions as well, you can also look at the ranks on Friends
with Fantasy Benefits.com. Yeah, I know, but I have you here, and I don't feel like looking at your ranks right now.
I have Antonio Gates as my seventh rate tight end this week, and Jesse James right now at 15. So, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, I'm not going to take it for much, but, you know, whatever.
Falcons and Raiders is the next game up. What do you want to talk about in this game, Eli?
How petrified I am about Devontae Freeman right now. I don't know. I still think he's going to – I think it was foolish for anyone to suspect that he would do anything like he did last year. But I thought at the very least he'd be able to hold off Tevin Coleman enough that Freeman would still be a very solid fantasy option. Do you think that's going to be the case, or do you think this is going to be a little bit of a nightmare?
I do not feel good about Freeman, and I didn't feel good about him coming into the season. I certainly don't feel good about it now. The fact that these two kind of split everything in week one, if you look at the snap count, 36 to 32 in favor of Freeman, that is not a good enough split for guys that were taking Freeman in, you know, what, the second round or so. That's definitely a problem. As far as the touches, it went, 13 to 15 in favor of Devontae Freeman, but Tevin Coleman obviously had the bigger day, 5 receptions for 95 yards. If the receiving goes down big for Devontae Freeman this year, then you can automatically count him out as being a running back one. For me, I think that you look at both of these guys as, you know, running back two, running back threes for now, but I do not like this situation for Freeman at all. I think that this is going to end up being Tevin Coleman's gig when it's all said and done. This regime in Atlanta doesn't have anything invested in Devontae Freeman at all. They definitely drafted Tevin Coleman, though, and they, I believe, want him to be their guy. They like him a lot, and they should, because he is the type of guy that can run an 80-yard touchdown at any time. He has that kind of home run hitting speed that every NFL team looks for. He's just he's the more talented back. You know, if he ever gets that zone scheme down, which it seems like he's starting to a little bit, he can certainly be a force in this league. So for right now, at least, I think Tevin Coleman is the guy, the preferred own in this backfield, not Devontae Freeman.
I think the moral of this story is that fantasy football sucks.
No, it doesn't. In terms of the Raiders, I do want to kind of just mention here that I think that Amari Cooper will probably be, a nice wide receiver one for this week, but I don't like the matchup. This is a situation with the Falcons where they have a nice number one quarterback that I can't think of his name of right now, but they do pretty well on wide receiver ones. Last year, they were top five against wide receiver ones on the season. Again, Amari Cooper is a great, great player, so I think it's pretty obvious when you watched him against the Saints last week that he is an absolute stud, but just keep that in the back of your mind. I think Crabtree is an automatic wide receiver two for this week. I would watch Latavius Murray a bit because even though he did okay last week, we're seeing Jalen Richard get implemented into the offense a bit, and we're also seeing DeAndre Washington kind of continue to get a little bit of a role as well. So just something to kind of monitor as we keep on going throughout the season. But for right now, I think that Latavius Murray, Cooper, Crabtree, and Derek Carr are all nice options for this week.
Don't forget about Jamiz Eluwale. God, he had a touchdown last week.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. What about Clyde Walford? Still like a more of a elite tight end too to you, probably?
Yeah, I have him as my 16th ranked tight end, right behind Jesse James for this week. I don't mind starting him. I mentioned him as a guy in DFS for this week. Certainly think that he could catch a touchdown. It's kind of tough with this Raiders offense, though. They have so many options that they can go with. It's really kind of hard to pinpoint where they might go, but the Falcons, you know, they were bottom five in tight end defense last year. They obviously gave up two touchdowns to Buccaneers tight ends last week. That's certainly something that, you know, is favorable in Clive Walford for Clive Walford overall. In terms of the wide receivers last year, the Falcons were a little bit better. So that's something also to kind of keep in the back of your mind. That's why I kind of have a little bit of hesitation with Cooper, but you automatically have to play him. It's not really a question. But again, you know, the Falcons were second best in the league in fantasy points per game to wide receivers last year. Mike Evans kind of had a fluky touchdown last week, but other than that, they kind of kept everything in check for the Bucs. I feel
like you're like the crappy tight end DFS whisperer. Like last year,
Gary Barnage before anybody else.
Well, not only that, but like I feel like every time you recommended like a non-elite tight end in DFS, they went off. I know there are a couple other examples. I can't remember them. You maybe could, but every time you recommend a tight end in DFS, it's cash money, man.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Which means that everybody should be listening to what I'm saying.
Yeah, probably.
Let's pick the game. Oakland is a 4.5-point favorite at home against the Falcons, 48.5 over under. I'm going to go with the Raiders. How about you?
Yeah, I'll take them too. That's a tough one, but I'm definitely going over on that one.
Colts and Broncos. My thoughts on this game is I just want Andrew Luck to stay alive and not get a lacerated spleen or anything like that. I think that this is possibly the best possible. I think the end of this game will possibly be the best case scenario in terms of selling Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders for that matter. I'm just not high on either of them. I think that this is going to be a CJ Anderson led team. If in case you didn't watch week one against Carolina, CJ Anderson is an absolute star. As long as he stays healthy, for me, he is a top four running back in fantasy. I am as my number two running back for this week, but he could easily be my number one option. I think that he's an absolute star. There's really not much else for me to say on that end, but I do think Virgil Green is a nice little start for this week as well. Indianapolis obviously gave up a touchdown to Eric Ebron in week one. They're not a very good defense as a whole, so I have him ranked as the 14th tight end on my board. So so I like him as a little sneaky play for this week.
I'm interested in what you think about the receiving core in Indianapolis. Obviously, we like Luck because he's talented, and he also has four pretty good weapons to throw to. How do you rank the three receivers, Hilton, Dorsett, and Moncrief?
For this week or for the season?
Both. Why don't we start with this week?
Let's see. For this week, I'll have to kind of go through. I know that Hilton I have Hilton as my 25th option, and it's kind of tough when you have the Denver corners up against you. I have Moncrief as a borderline wide receiver 3-4 at number 38, and then Phil Dorsett I think I have way later as, you know, more than likely just a bench option. For the season, I think it's the same way. I really like Moncrief. I think that he is a, you know, really nice, precise route runner. But at the end of the day, he doesn't have the upside of T.Y. Hilton in terms of running long touchdowns and such. Last week, in terms of the targets, it went 12-7-6 in favor of Hilton. And then second was Moncrief. In terms of receptions, Hilton and Moncrief both were tied with 6. Again, I just think that this is going to be a Hilton, Moncrief, Dorsett offense, but I do think Dwayne Allen is going to mix in there in terms of red zone usage. If you didn't see between Jack Doyle and Dwayne Allen last week, they scored 3 touchdowns. So I think Dwayne Allen will be a heavy, heavy, guy to be used in the red zone, at least for the foreseeable future until he possibly gets injured like he has every single year for the last 3.
Do you think there could be a little bit of a step down for Hilton this year with Moncrief and the other guy? What's the other guy's name again? Dorsett. Hilton derives most of his value from the amount of catches he gets because he's not a big touchdown guy. But if his catches go down a little bit, that hurts him.
No, I loved Hilton coming into this year, and I still love him now. The Colts offense is so bad that you can't really, you know, and they also are high in pace. They were third in pace in week one. This is a fast moving offense. They love to pass. They don't want to crush Frank Gore in terms of running back touches either. I don't think that there's going to be any type of real downside to T.Y. Hilton. I have him as a wide receiver one coming into the year, and I still think that he's going to be a wide receiver one when we finish everything up. I also think Moncrief is going to be a borderline, you know, wide receiver two with some, you know, with multiple wide receiver one weeks as well. And then Dorsett, I think, will be a really sneaky second half surger that, you know, ends up with a wide receiver 3 numbers a lot of times as well. So, you know, I love the pass catchers here. The main caveat being that, you know, Andrew Luck stays healthy, and that all starts this week against Denver. Cause my God, they could absolutely crush him.
So I feel like Emmanuel Sanders is going to have a big game cause Demaryius is really banged up, and I know you're hating on these guys and I get it. Trevor Siemian is not exactly going to be great for their fantasy values, but they're still really talented. I think they're going to be productive. I like Sanders this week.
I like Sanders this week, and I like Thomas too. I have Thomas, you know, as a wide receiver one in my ranks at number 12, and I have Sanders at 24. I think there's easily a argument to be made that you can swap them in the rankings. Sanders, you know, plays a slot. Vontae Davis is going to be out this week for Indianapolis, so, you know, you can certainly see a scenario where, you know, Sanders ends up with 2 touchdowns and, you know, 10 receptions, and then Demaryius Thomas kind of, you know, ends up with 6 or 7 receptions for, you know, 70, 80 yards or something like that. But regardless, I think both of them have a strong week this week. But again, that's what I'm kind of saying here is after this week is over, possibly you can sell them and get a nice piece in return because, you know, in the long term, I think that this is just going to be a very run heavy offense that, you know, really just limits the upside of Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders both. Let's pick the game. We have Denver minus 6 at home against the Colts. 46.5 is the over-under. I'm going to go with Denver minus 30.
I'm going to go with the Colts.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm not saying they're going to win straight up, but I'm picking them against 6? The spread.
Okay. I don't mind that. I don't mind that. I just was kind of shot to the at the beginning of that. All right. Next game. We have two more left. We're almost done.
Packers, thank God.
Packers and Vikings. What do you want to talk about from this game?
You know, I don't think there's – the Packers are pretty straightforward. You start Rodgers, you start Lacy, you start Cobb and Nelson and hope that Devontae Adams doesn't steal away their production. I don't know. Minnesota, you start Peterson and Diggs and maybe Rudolph if you're in a pinch. I don't know. They're just not very exciting, Minnesota.
No, you're right. You're right. I do want to kind of mention, I don't think Aaron Rodgers has an amazing week against Minnesota. Minnesota's defense looks absolutely legit, so you know, take that for what it's worth. But it looks like Green Bay is going with a primary three wide receiver set. Devontae Adams is playing every bit of the snaps. He actually got more snaps than Jordy Nelson in week one. I think it's time to revisit Devontae Adams as a possible guy to use in PPR leagues as a wide receiver 4 or 5 type guy that you leave on your bench, but could be useful in some scenarios depending on the matchup. So I do just want to kind of mention somebody like Adams there. But you pretty much hit everything on the head there. I think that that's a pretty, you know, straightforward way of looking at the game. AP is a top five running back, and Diggs is the only, you know, only pass catcher on Minnesota that I'm okay with starting. As far as the quarterback situation for Minnesota, it looks like Bradford is going to get his first start this week. Certainly not a guy that you want to play at all. He actually is my 30th ranked quarterback for this week. But, you know, I would just, you know, kind of see how the offense is used with somebody like Bradford on the field.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's how it's going to play out, too. And that's probably where I'd have Bradford ranked as well. I do think in general that this helps the receiving core, right? I mean, Sean Hill is... Bradford's no stud. There's no doubt about that. But Sean Hill's, you know, Sean Hill.
Yeah, he is. He's not very good, obviously. But I do think in the long term it does help them. I would not say that Laquon Treadwell is just completely out, you know, for the season. I certainly would have him as your, you know, a guy on your watch list and somebody that you just kind of monitor, because Bradford does have the type of arm that could certainly, you know, yield to some production for 2 or 3 pass catchers in this team instead of just one in Diggs. I do want to just mention Jared Cook is absolutely terrible, and hopefully everybody reassures themselves of that after watching him in week one. Let's pick the game. Vikings against the Packers. The Vikings are at home, but Green Bay is a 2.5-point favorite. Eli, who are you taking?
Green Bay.
I am going to take the Packers as well, but it's insanely close. I wouldn't mind taking the Vikings either, but I'll go with Green Bay just because I'm feeling that way. Monday Night Football, last game, Eli. Eagles and the Bears. Let's see. I will talk about the Eagles situation here. With Zach Ertz being out, we have Brent Celek looking like he is going to take over tight end duties for the Eagles. Something I like to always mention in this situation is that, you know, a lot of people automatically want to put Brent Celek as a possible starting option. And the thing I'll say to that is Chip Kelly's scheme always yields good to, you know, slot receivers and tight ends, because those are the first two reads in his scheme. Doug Peterson looks like he is not that type of coach. Looks like his scheme is more favorable to the outside receivers. So I don't want to automatically bank on Brent Celek being a possible tight end option for us. I have him as my 20th tight end for this week, so that goes to show you where I have him ranked. I do not buy Brent Celek. I think that he is a mediocre, if that, talent in the NFL. So for me, I am not going to be playing Brent Celek this week overall. Is there anything that you want to talk about from this game?
This is kind of boring as well. What, for Chicago, Langford's not very talented, but he's the clear running back one. He's not getting any competition, so you got to start him. Jeffrey, obviously. Royal and White every once in a while will do something, but not consistently enough to start him. I think Zach Miller at some point could be a factor, but I don't think he's going to be there yet. And with Philly, do you think there's anything to be seen here with Nelson Agholor? Are you encouraged with what happened in week one, or do you think he's going to have a bad year again?
No, I actually am very intrigued by it, to be honest. I like him as a talent, and I think people kind of left him for dead, especially with this whole Eagles offense, to be honest with you, and myself included. I just, you know, threw Carson Wentz out and didn't really think of him as anything special, and he went out in week one, and, you know, I mean, I know it was Cleveland, but he did what he was supposed to do. He's a rookie, and he looks great. Nelson Agholor looks great as well, so he played in all of the two wide receiver sets. He was on the field a ton, 67 snaps, which is absolutely great as well. There's a lot to like here with Aguilar. If he kind of takes some steps forward this season, that we could be seeing a guy that certainly could be a useful wide receiver three at times, and maybe even, you know, room for more, you know, depending on the matchup and all that stuff. But I'm definitely intrigued here. He only got 5 targets with Matthews, you know, really overtaking everything. He had 14. So, you know, I think Matthews is certainly the guy that's going to lead the way here. But Aguilar is a little interesting and certainly should be, you know, back on people's minds after just having an absolutely hideous rookie season.
One other thing, do you still like Sproles a little bit in PPR leagues, or do you think like he's slowly diminishing and you know, he's getting older, and how long can this guy really be productive?
I watched Sproles and I just didn't like anything I saw. He is getting older and it's just not looking great. I think in the case that when Ryan Matthews gets injured, we are going to see a ton of Sproles still, but it is going to be Barner. Sproles' role is going to be the same. He's going to play about half the snaps. He's going to continue to get a bunch of receptions, which is, you know, the way that his role should be, but he is nothing special anymore. It wouldn't surprise me if CJ Spiller got signed by Philadelphia, you know, and they ended up releasing Sproles at some point. That's kind of how I feel about it. I just think Sproles' time has kind of came and went, and, you know, he's had a solid career, but it's time to, you know, kind of leave him in the back burner in terms of fantasy.
I think you're right. I mean, he didn't have 400 yards either the last 2 years, and the last 2 years combined, he had 1 touchdown reception, and it's not like he's getting a ton of carries, especially with Barner emerging a little bit. So, yeah, I think if someone were to go down, that might help Sproles a little, but for the most part, I think Sproles could be kind of left alone.
Yeah, I'm out. Let's pick the game. We have the Bears at home against the Eagles. Chicago is 3-point favorites. I am going to take the Eagles. How about you?
I'm going to go with the Bears. I think Wentz is going to struggle in the second game on the road on the big stage Monday Night Football. Wentz did fumble 2 times last week. They didn't lose any of them, but I think he could be in for a really rough day.
I don't mind that call at all. We very well could see that. Eli, we are finally done with the preview edition after possibly 3.5 hours of doing this.
That's a slight exaggeration, but not too far off.
Not too far off. Let everybody know again where they can reach you and everything, and what you're working on.
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, and the Fantasy Basketball Pod will be returning very soon, so be on the lookout for that. We're going to have a new feed for that, so you're going to have to search for that on iTunes. We'll let you know when that comes out.
Absolutely. Can't wait for that to happen. NBA 2K just came out. We got to get some basketball going.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait to get my ass kicked once again.
You can find me on Twitter at MikeWarnerFWFB. We have a brand new NFL homepage on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. My amazing girlfriend who runs the site has done a great job with it. Please check it out. It's pretty awesome if you haven't seen it yet. So
my imaginary girlfriend's gonna crash the site. That's what I'm gonna have her do.
Well, it just you know, I mean, she's put the schedule up there, all the scores are up there, the podcasts, all of our articles, just everything is in a nice neat orderly spot, and it all looks great, which is the best thing. So check all of that out. Go on there.
I hope you have her in a keeper league.
Yeah, I do have my girlfriend in a keeper league. She's actually my top pick in the dynasty league, so she's going to be around for a while.
And you should have traded down. No, I'm just kidding.
No, she's untradeable.
Yeah,
she's
should have traded down and acquired more picks.
She's like Odell Beckham for me right now, so she'll be on my team for a while.
Does she use one hand a lot? Hey-o.
That was solid. That's definitely going to go in the opening.
Thank you.
You can also check out any of my work on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. We have our weekly ranks up there for each position. So if you have any you know, start sit questions, certainly go on the website and check those rankings out. Also, you know, get yourself a username and become active in some of our forums on the site. That certainly is a way to be, you know, more interactive with us and, you know, get a lot of your questions answered as well. You can check out the DFS podcast that I do with our brand new host, Sasha Salinger, if I can pronounce her name right at all. You know, we do that every week, so check that out. That's also available on iTunes and any of your podcast aggregators. Please rate and review the show. Any 5-star review really helps us get noticed by other people, so please do that for us. And check out all of our baseball stuff at the site. We're still continuing all of the baseball content. Got a lot going on friendswithfantasybenefits.com, so please check that all out. For Eli and myself, crush week 2.